traveling the world, searching for equestrians of all breeds. The journey starts now on the International Equine Network.
Hey, racing fans, Steve Wolf here, your host for Flying Turns, part of the great International Equine Network that was founded by our co-host on the show and developed by Scott Miller. Scott, how are you going?
Steve, I'm doing good. I'm excited about all the racing and, you know, all the horse industry is getting back to normal, what I'm calling normal again, and getting excited. All of our standardbred guys are gone, and that's why we're coming to you to find out what's going on in the standardbred industry and who's racing and who's winning and who's not.
There's an awful lot. The only thing that I know as a fact, because it happened already, was that racing returned up in Nova Scotia at Touro Racetrack. And they, to the best of my knowledge, is the first track in the world to allow fans to come to the races. And
why is that?
Well, because apparently they only had maybe 250, 300 people that came out, and they had everyone practice social distancing and going up to the betting windows and stuff. They had to be far apart and stand and do everything just almost like a restaurant per se, but they felt that they were not going to have, you know, the biggest of crowds, and they got the government to allow them to have fans come to the races. And apparently they had 200 to 300 people come out, you know, which again, it's Touro Raceway up in Nova Scotia. So people, of course, are wary, but they were very pleased with the crowd. But as you said before, many of the racetracks have now opened, and they're having record handle without fans at the track, which makes it quite a bit interesting.
Yeah. Well, Steve, let me ask you, how are they horse-wise? Do they have enough horses to have a good meet?
No, that was going to be my first topic. They had so many horses enter the Meadowlands for this weekend's racing. The most ever, for two nights of racing, they had 777 horses entered in the box, and they could only use 200 of them. So Jeff Gorell, the owner of the Meadowlands, tried to make an arrangement with the Horsemen's Association to add a third night of racing, provided that the Horsemen's Association allowed the purse structure to be able to handle it and use future purses to be able to have extra horses race. And it looked like the deal was going to go through but in order to jump through the, quote, hoops of the New Jersey Racing Commission, it was going to take too long. So now that deal went off the table. And as of this morning, they're going to add, they can't do it for this week, but then next week, instead of running 10 races, they're going to run 15 races. So that will, you know, get another 100 horses in. But still, that's just 300 of the 777 horses that want to get in the box. Now, the reason this is happening, of course, is because, number one, Yonkers Raceway is yet to reopen. They were the epicenter for the coronavirus when it first got started. And they, the New York State Wagering Board and the City of New York and Governor Cuomo is making sure that everything is okay before they allow Yonkers Raceway to open. Now, that being said, Pocono Downs has yet to get a date to reopen. Pennsylvania Tom Wolf is just starting to allow tracks in Pennsylvania. I think the Meadows will be the first one to open at the end of the month. Then hopefully Harris Chester will open, and eventually Yonkers, of course, will be allowed, and then that'll be able to take in enough horses. Tracks like Harrington Raceway, they've opened up, so they'll be getting some of the horses, but those 777 horses represent, you know, maybe 100 or more that would go to Pocono, 100 or more that would be at Yonkers. So that number would, you know, come down drastically. In August, the Freehold Raceway opens. You know, it's all territorial. Up in right. Quebec, they have enough, more than enough horses, because most of the tracks, even the smaller ones, Dresden Raceway, Clinton Raceway, of course, Mohawk Raceway is opening. But we have to understand that this horse population is going to even increase more, because starting this morning are the two-year-old races at Mohawk Raceway, and then Monday, Gateway Farm, and then the Meadowlands. And so you're going to have hundreds of two-year-olds that are just beginning their careers, and they're going to start to get in racing. So as the racetracks open, there is absolutely no horse shortage anywhere.
Right. Well, Steve, let me ask you this. I know that with standardbreds, they generally can run three weeks out of the 4 week out of the month. They can race, you know, kind of like every week, different when
yes.
the standardbreds do. Now, if you've got 700 horses that enter, and you got 300 that run today, how are they going to space them out and schedule them out?
Well, what there's going to happen is these horsemen are going to have to bite the bullet and travel. In other words, whether they can get in at Harrington Raceway, Vernon Downs, Tioga Downs is open. But again, their entry boxes are full. It's a question of getting tracks like the Meadows near Pittsburgh, then Pocono Downs, and Yonkers Raceway back racing. Once those tracks are up and running, which could be a few weeks away, horsemen are going to have to sort of be like the thoroughbred counterparts and be lucky if they can race once or twice a month, if that. Hopefully the horse does well. Otherwise, you know, there's another month. That'll be the fourth month in a row that these horses are being trained or being kept in condition but are unable to race. So it is it's a tenuous situation. And, you know, depending on the class of horse you have, hopefully it's going to get in every other week as opposed to every week. And, you know, we're going to have to wait and see what happens. But right now it's, I'm trying to think of the expression. I guess you'd almost call it a ballywick of what is happening. You know, it's a catch-22. In other words, you know, if your horse can fit in this week, fine, but it may not get in for a couple more weeks. So hopefully the horses are fit and ready. I mean, most of the tracks are doing great with the spectator less or you know, no fans in the stands. But we have to remember that a track like Scioto Downs, who's been averaging over $1 million a night in simulcast wagering, that what it comes down to is that the track is only making maybe 3% of that money back to pay for purses. So I think it's just barely covering, you know, the purse structure. So are the tracks making a lot of money? No, they're not. They're not able to sell race programs. They're not able to sell food and concessionaire items and things like that they do make a profit on, because there's no fans in the stands.
Well, you know, we talked a little bit last week about the television and the thoroughbreds have made some wheeling and dealing deals with Fox Sports and some other people about broadcasting racing. And it seems to be working. You know, do you think that they would be able to do that with the standardbreds?
No, that's not going to happen. I know the deals are made for some of the big races, like the Little Brown Jug, the Meadowlands Pace, the Hamiltonian, the Breeders' Crown. They all have deals with the CBS Sports Network. But other than that, unlike the thoroughbreds, harness racing does not have the television national or world exposure that the thoroughbreds do. So the monies that you would think that the thoroughbred people are getting, because they have great races that get the television rights, it's not the same in harness racing.
Oh, man. How does it look for the owners this year? Do you think that the owners are going to take a big loss in this, or do you think that they'll be able to recoup, you know, some of their money?
Well, I think they'll be able to recoup, depending, of course, on how good their horses are. They're going to be able to recoup it because most of the sire stakes are being rescheduled. So that, yes, there may be a couple legs, you know, that the horses would be eligible for. But I think these horsemen realize that there's only going to be so much racing. So they're going to gear their horses up for the bigger stake races and make sure that they're, you know, the horse is healthy and ready to go in it. The bread and butter of harness racing is the overnight races, which, you know, for the most part, a good overnight horse is still going to have that ability, you know, to make that money to be able to race. But as of course, then the sire stakes are starting this weekend. Tioga Downs has the $50,000 graduate series coming in for four-year-olds. So there'll be, if each division goes 50,000, they could be racing for 150,000 this weekend. So the stakes season is definitely getting, you know, it's going to get underway and in a big way with the graduate, which is only for four-year-olds. So those horses are getting an early start in their stake races. But the New York Sire Stakes is getting underway, which is good as these horses qualify and race, you know, with the Grand Circuit. New York Sire Stakes is already going to have three-year-old events at Tioga Downs, Buffalo Raceway, and Vernon Downs. So they're going to get right into it. And I think what has happened is, with the exception of Pennsylvania, because they have not started racing yet, is that most of these Sire Stake programs have had to trim maybe one leg, one or two weeks of racing out of the schedule. And, you know, it's just it's a lost cause, but they're still going to be able to have other legs to race for. And, you know, the rich $250,000 finals for each of the race divisions, and there's eight of them. So they're in New York, is they're pretty well underway. Pennsylvania, that's another situation. The Meadows is definitely getting ready to race out in Pittsburgh, but no word on Harrah's, no word on Pocono Downs. You know, they've got to come up racing, and of course Yonkers for the New York Sire Stakes there. But it's still, the virus has put a big hurting on horse racing. But it's all coming back, and that's what matters. Yeah. As long as it comes back now, the season can, you know, we can still think of having award winners at the end of the season because they're going to race through October as normal. And that the owners are going to make the money, hopefully, with their 2 and 3 year olds and the elder horses and stakes, and thus still be interested in buying yearlings come the end of the season, come November.
Yeah, well, that's part of the other question that I wanted to find out from you. One was about the Breeders' Crown in Indiana. What's it coming up? Are they still on schedule for that?
Oh, yeah, there's no question on it. I mean, the Hoosier Park in Indiana is hosting all the Breeders' Crown races. They've done it before. They do a superb job. All the horses will be geared towards that. There's no question that that's going to go as scheduled. By that time period, by the end of October, I'm pretty sure that I'm hopeful that the virus has reached a point where fans can go to the stands and just be responsible for themselves to keep social distancing, you know, at some degree. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised that when they let the fans come in the stands that a lot of them will be wearing masks. I mean, that's just the way to go, to play it safe for everyone else. But it's all going to come back. I'm sure it's going to, you know, be, the season's going to, you know, it's been held up for a while. But let me tell you, I give all the credit to the owners. They've supported their trainers and keeping their stables going. I mean, I don't think you heard of any hardship cases at your facility during the pandemic.
No.
You know,
everything went on as normal.
You had hundreds and hundreds, and because harness racing and thoroughbred racing is back going again, their domino theory of how they affect and are used by so many people in the working world. I mean, the trucking industry, just to ship all these horses and all the equipment from all the different tracks in Florida. People don't realize that during the winter, Florida holds perhaps more than half of all the harness racing horses in training winter in Florida. Right. I mean, how much money is being spent that way just to keep them going? But now they're moving, they're getting truckers, they're getting industry going, they're getting racing equipment. I mean, it's all all positive effects are taking place.
Yeah, well, how's that going to affect the sales? Do you think there's going to be a lot more horses in the sales this year? Or,
I don't know if there may be more. Again, usually those sales all depend on how each individual stable is doing. If they have horses who during the pandemic didn't, you know, fare well and aren't racing well in the stake races, they're going to go into the sales, but someone else is going to pick them up. I think the money is going to be there. The only difference that I see upcoming is because of the pandemic, people are doing so much stuff online that there are two new online horse sale and auction companies that have popped up. OnGate.com has been literally the only one in the harness racing business, but now they have some competition as a new company, HoofBid, that's HoofBid.com, HoofBid, is already underway and doing online auctions and sales, and Preferred Equine Marketing, the biggest live auction company in the sport, who does the sales of the Meadowlands. They have the Tattersalls in Kentucky. I mean, they have horses going in and all the sales, Harrisburg, everyone else. They're coming out soon with their own online auction. So I think a lot of horses, the sales may have less horses, but and only because they're going to go with the subsidiary of the sales with the online auctions.
Right, right. Well,
so, we may not see.
Started that too.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it hasn't really been done before with the thoroughbreds like it has with Eric Cherry's on gate.com. But everyone's coming on board because they're realizing they can call up a friend. They can get a veterinarian to go out and look and vet the horse and check it all out. And if everything seems fine, then they're willing to bid online for them. They say, okay, I want this horse. And, you know, remember Atlanta, they had to dissolve the ownership there of that horse.
Right.
Went for $1.5 million online.
Yeah.
So,
well, they're doing the same thing with the thoroughbreds. They've gone to online bidding.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
it's important to have different avenues that horsemen can do and do the sales. I mean, I don't want to take anything away from the sales company, but it's the way to go. I mean, you know, if you're looking to get the kind of racehorse you want, they're going to advertise it ahead of time. You'll be able to see its pedigree and do everything. You'll be able to see video of it racing. You get a veterinarian to make sure the horse seems sound, and you can just bid right online. You don't have to go to Harrisburg or not.
Right. Well, you know, quite a few years ago at Keeneland, they had a sale coming up, and they had a full brother to a horse, a two-year-old that was in sale. And so it was kind of interesting. The full brother actually was running in a grade one stake race in California. So what they kind of tweaked the show, the sales, to where that right before he went into the ring, they watched the race of his full brother. He won the race, and then they started the auction on that hip number. And that's when they realized that, you know, that they could do a lot of things online.
Sure.
And, you know, I think that that's carrying over now. So you're going to see a lot of this online thing going. And you know, that's like our philosophy here with our show called Last Call. the whole premise behind that will be is that you don't have to leave your farm. Like, say, for example, here at Sunshine Meadows or Palm Beach Downs or at your farm, wherever you're at, you can hand pick, you know, a few horses, throw them into an online sale. You can watch them train. You can watch them do whatever. You know, you can have them vetted out, and then you can actually, you know, bid online and buy the horse. And that way you don't have to travel, you know, anywhere, kind of like OnGate does. You know, but
exactly.
We'll have announcers like yourself talking about, you know. And that's going to be the next big thing that's going on in the business, is stay-at-home auction. You know, and
well,
that way
and you brought up a good point
about
where – you brought up a good point about that horse. It's Full Brother Racing in California that they were able to actually put the horse in a position in the online sale than here or on sale. But here they were able to show the race, watch this Full Brother go, and realize this horse is going to, you know, has great potential because of his brother. And they do not do that in harness racing. As of yet, they don't, but it's a novel idea. Because this past year, the richest yearling ever was purchased, $1.1 million, and he was down by you training all winter and doing great, Maverick, who is a full brother to the three-year-old trotting colt of the year, Green Shoe, who went to stud, and his book is, you know, closed, full book, solid. But now my understanding is that Maverick did very, very well at Sunshine Meadows, and hopefully we're going to see him baby race this weekend or next.
Well, you know, that's the great thing about being here in Sunshine Meadows, is you get to see a lot of these, you know, horses train every day, you know, for 5-6 months. And then when they head up north, you start watching, you know, to see what they're doing and where they're going. And it's really exciting, you know, because you know that horse. You know, and that's what we're trying to figure out, you know, is how much this virus set all their training back, if at all.
No, I don't think anything has been set back. And if anything at all, the weather up north has been probably one of the most mild winters they've had. So they did not lose time like most winters. And that makes a big difference in the training schedule. Plus, these guys didn't have to ship down, which is a huge cost to move a stable back and forth.
Right. Well, Steve, how are they going to get all these drivers around when they get up there if they've got to hop from track to track?
Well, it's not in that position yet that they have to worry about it. In other words, right now, the only two tracks that are close enough that drivers can go from one to the other is Scioto Downs, which is in Columbus, Ohio, and Northfield Park, which is in Cleveland. And that's maybe a two-hour, you know, drive one way. And but that's the only one that shows any conflict. Other than that, the drivers have to make their choice. They're either going to race at the Meadowlands, or they're going to have to go up to Mohawk Raceway, you know, the top-class drivers, which they're really not going to do. They're going to keep their home base where it is. And, of course, hopefully within time, Yonkers Raceway will open, and they'll be able to get back into the swing of, you know, racing here and then going to another track. But those days are numbered right now because of the virus and the pandemic. One interesting note, though, is that the leading trainer stable in Australia, Shane and Laura Triton, have come to America, and they brought 10 horses with them, 10 of their best horses with them, and actually have them all just qualified. Two of them are racing Friday night, and they've enlisted the USA's Jordan Stratton to drive them until the wife, Laura Triton, is ready to take over. She won two qualifying races with her horses, but apparently in Australia, Laura is one of the top drivers out there, and it's her and her husband's stable, and they're looking to make their mark in North America. So that's going to be something interesting. And, you know, it's been some time, you know, that we've had a woman driver that could make headlines. And apparently Laura Triton has done that throughout Australia and is looking to do the same in America. I mean, of course, Jacqueline Gracia is probably one of the top women drivers. She doesn't drive as much anymore out in the East Coast. And there's a number of women amateur drivers that have made their mark. But Laura here is a top class A driver. And what she wants to do now is she's studying the racing tactics. She's getting used to it because it's a little bit different than from Australia. I don't know if you know this or our fans, but in Australia, you're allowed to what they call jostle with another horse. You're actually, if you're sitting in the two hole and a horse is outside of you and that horse isn't making ground and you've got a slight opening, you can actually force your way out, almost push against that horse to get to the outside to get an opening. It's called jostling. And as long as you don't interfere with that horse or cause it to go off stride, you can actually push him to the outside and get through the gap and win.
You think that's going to be a help to her or hurt her when she races?
No, she already knows. She's, you know, what happened was they came here, they set up their stable, they got everything ready, and then when the pandemic hit, they were stuck here. So they've been here, you know, they haven't been able to go back to Australia. They've been here the whole time. So she's been studying and everything. And the fact that she's going up against the top drivers in the world and already won a couple qualifying races shows that she does have the ability to drive with the boys. And her stock is that good. And that what really matters. Yeah. If you know your horse better than anybody and you have that ability, she just has to remember that when she's in the two hole, she's got to sit there. She just can't push her way out like they can do down under. But I thought that a little bit different, and I give her credit for, you know, letting the horses start off with the Jordan Stratton driving them, who's a superb top of the world driver, and that she will eventually get up in the races and take on the boys.
Yeah, that's going to be good to see. You know, that, and it just goes to show you that that's a good role model to let, you know, especially for our industry, that, you know, that women can do, you know, the things that guys can do, you know.
And absolutely. They've shown it in the ability for training. I mean, you have Casey Coleman and Linda Toscano and, of course, Nancy Tactor. I mean, some of the best trainers in the world. But when it comes, you know, to the core of driving, and in Europe, in Sweden, we see so many more women, especially when they have the Monty, the racing under saddle. When I was in Paris, other than Eric Raffin, women were the other leading jockeys for trotting under saddle, both in Sweden and
Julie Crone.
In fact, right. Well, yeah, look at Julie Crone. I mean, that was years ago, but since that time, right. I mean, especially in Europe, I know the Elite Lop was won by a woman driver, you know, years ago, because they love the horses as much as the guys do, and they have the ability. I mean, just as they Julie Crone could do as a jockey, we'll see if Laura Triton can do the same thing. But you know what? I want to go back to a European racing, the business with the horse Propulsion, who actually trained right at Sunshine Meadows as a 2 and 3 year old. He was sold to Europe, where he went on to win $3.6 million, and then right after he won the most prestigious race in all of Sweden, the Elite Lop, they've come to find out that Propulsion was blocked, or nerved, as some of them say, in his feet. And in Europe, that's a no-no. That's just like drugging a horse to have a horse that's been nerved or blocked.
Okay.
So this
are you there?
Investi- Yes.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Did we lose you?
Yeah. I guess you did for a minute. So what are they going to do with the purse money?
Well, right now the horse is banned in Sweden while the investigation continues. But in Sweden, when they have a very good horse like Propulsion, who made $3.6 million while racing just in Europe, he bred horses. He has 90 foals on the ground and probably 100 mares in foal to him in Europe. And they just announced that these foals that have been born and the ones that he has bred, that they will be able to race in Europe. But until that time, he's not allowed to breed anymore. He's not allowed to race. He's not allowed to breed. I'm sorry?
Can he come to the States and for breeding?
Absolutely. And a few people said that already. They said, bring him back home to America. We're fine. He can breed all he wants to. And you know, he can race in all the with a stake races he can be made eligible for, because all the tracks would love to have him back in racing. And will that happen? I don't know. I think the owners of the horse, called Brixton Medical, I think they're prepared to bring a multi-million-dollar lawsuit against the Swedish Trotting Association, because they're the ones who, you know, should have seen on the paperwork that he was blocked, and they should not have ever allowed him to race in Europe. But now that the damage is done, what are you going to do? Are you going to try and get the $3.6 million back that he made?
Will they be able
because,
to
of course, that's
going to
bring the big lawsuit and what's going on. And then what to do with the racehorse in the meantime? I don't know if he's missed any major stake races. Usually
Steve?
Winner of the elite lot, because they have to go two heats in one day. That takes a lot out of a horse. But he was fresh.
Don,
he was just coming
there
from a layoff before he won the elite lot. It's a really tough question, and a lot of people have ideas, and some of them are good, some of them are a little whacked out, but at this point here, until Sweden says something, I might even consider the idea of bringing them back here to race.
But if I'm still on air, we'll start talking about them.
I'm here. I'm here. Scott?
Are you there?
Yes.
Yeah, are you there?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Where'd we leave off there?
We were talking about Propulsion. And
I don't know
what happened with my phone. I'm trying to figure out why it's cutting out or not.
Uh-oh. Okay.
But we'll find out.
We'll figure it out. Yeah, that's the main thing about the breeding aspect of it, is he can still breed, you know, here in the States. You know,
yep,
just
not here
in Europe. Certainly, you know, hurt him a little bit financially, but at least his babies can run here in the States.
Right. And what I've said before, though, I think, is that Brixton Medical Lab that owns the horse, if the Swedish government doesn't, you know, admit that they were at fault and leave the horse alone, or if they try and take the money away from him, the $3.6 million, they're going to, you know, bring a counter lawsuit, and it's going to get nasty. So,
I would imagine so.
We don't know what the solution is going to be. The Swedish government has to, I guess, a couple of heads have to roll first, and then they can make their decision. I would think that if they would say that due to the error of the Swedish government, that Propulsion, they won't take away the $3.6 million. They won't take away the elite lot victory, but they will ban him from Sweden and pretty much European racing, and he'll just come back to America.
Right, yeah.
Because there's so many people. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting, you know, to see, you know, how they do that.
Right, because we're talking either $1 million in lawsuits, or you know, we're talking just letting the horse, you know, slip by and. You know, having a few people end up getting fired, I don't know how it's going to go.
Yeah,
it's probably the good question of the week.
we'll have to wait for the movie to come out and see what happens.
Yeah,
right?
There you go.
Hey, Steve, well, to change course here on got some interesting news in the thoroughbred business.
Let's go.
It just come out.
Hit us with it.
Yeah. It was Bob Baffert had two horses coming in to get ready for the Derby. Had Natal and Charlatan, and they're both out with leg injuries. And then yesterday morning, Unbeaten Maxfield, that was going to the Bluegrass Stakes on July 11th, he sustained a leg injury in a morning workout. And he's going to be, out of action, for a while. And it's kind of interesting. Todd Pletcher had a horse, Governor Morris, is going to run in the Bluegrass Stakes instead of the Belmont Stakes. And the Belmont's coming up next week, next Saturday. So even after the virus and everybody trying to get settled in, where they're going to run, if they're going to run in at the Haskell or, the Belmont or the Bluegrass, now the injuries came up and everybody's going different directions now. So, it's going to be an interesting, Kentucky Derby this year.
Leading towards the Derby, but let's talk more about the Belmont. You have to have points that you earn in stake races, to be at one of the 12 or 15, I don't know how many horses. Well, the Belmont's a mile and a half, so they could have 15, 16 horses in it.
Yeah, they could, but the way it's going now, it looks like it's going to be a small field because of, just because of the virus and because of the horses that got hurt. The tough part about the Belmont is you have to train for that mile and a half.
Correct.
It's a tough
grind on a three-year-old. I know that.
Right. And it's awful tough. And so now that you got to just do the opposite, you got to train for the Belmont and then, bring your horses back down. And it's going to be interesting to see what happens, a week from Saturday. Barclay Tag's got a real nice horse.
What's its name?
Yeah, Tis the Law. He had raced in the Florida Derby at Gulfstream in March 28th. And, that's a really nice horse. Barclay Tag knows how to get there, with horses. He had Funny Side, that won the Derby. And he's going to be tough.
To have these horses ready to go at a mile and a half now they would be ready this time of the year anyhow for the Belmont. I mean, with the Derby pass, would have to start looking. Okay.
Yeah, it would be coming up. It is the time for the Belmont because that's when it's usually run as the second, as the third leg, and it's run in June. You haven't beat your horse up with the Derby and the Preakness, the time Belmont runs around. So these are literally going to be really fresh horses and everything that you see. But
there be a horse in the woodwork, like somebody who finished, they wanted to go in, let's say, at Gulfstream or something, and it won, it might have had only one or two starts that could be ready to go this distance and surprise everybody?
That's what they're talking about. Todd Pletcher's got a horse in there called Dr. Post. And, he's been training very well. He was sidelined for 9 months. And they brought him back. So, he's kind of ready to go. Mark Cassie, he's got a Tap It to Win, which is a nice horse coming up. It's going to be very interesting. It's probably going to be one of the best Belmonts in years, because just about any one of these horses can come in and win this thing.
And there might be some trainers out there whose horse could be eligible and they want to take a shot. I mean, they haven't been able to race for months. Well, unless they were at Gulfstream or the Fodder race course.
Right. Well, you know, Todd's got a horse called Farmington Road, and you know, he's been training real well. He ran fourth in the Arkansas Derby, and that was won by Bob Baffert's horse, Nattle. And so now, you know, he's coming around. You know, he's starting.
Let me ask you this: if anything, the purses dictate a lot. How much is the Belmont going to go for? Do we know?
Let's see. It's right at $1 million.
It is at $1 million.
You know, the purses haven't been affected in the thoroughbred business.
My question is that if you have this is $1 million race and all the leading contenders are sidelined, so if I'm a trainer and I said, boy, my horse is feeling pretty good, maybe they'll take a shot and want to go for $1 million and get a piece of the action.
Well, I think that's what they're hoping for, get a small field, you know. Patrick Biacone's got a nice horse. It's called Sol Volante. And he purchased that horse for $20 or $20,000 as a two-year-old in April last year. And the horse is close to earning $300,000 now.
Wow.
He's got, you know, so he's really moving right along. And, you know, that's a horse that's coming along. He's getting older. He's getting better. He's getting stronger. So, you know, that's a horse, you know, that you could look at. You know, so, you know, you're right. You know, you could take a shot at it. You know, I just see this probably being one of the best, smaller fields that the Belmont has had in, you know, the last 10 years, you know, for everybody. It's really going to be good. Of course, all the other tracks, you know, that have opened up, like Keeneland's going to have their 5-day meet. And then, of course, these are all grass races that they're going to have at Kentucky Downs. But they open up on the 7th and they run through the 16th. And that's going to be a lot of money offered there, Steve. You're talking
now,
about $90,000 maiden special weights.
Just 2 weeks to go, Belmont is open. They just opened?
Right, yeah. They just opened, and then they run to Belmont on Saturday, the 20th.
And how severe are the COVID-19, I guess, testing or conditions in order to race? How strict are they being? Or are they having to test
strict.
All the jockeys and trainers?
Yeah, they're strict, Steve. Every day they go through the testing. They do the, you know, the whole nine yards, come in just like you've never been there before. They got to know where you came from, where you've been, you know. And a lot of the trainers had a handful of horses. Like, say, that went to Churchill, they'd send 10 horses and, you know, 5 people. So, you know, they've got it down. You know, they're not having a problem, you know, with that.
Good.
You know, everybody's ready to, you know, open back up. The purse money is all in line. They're just, the only thing they need to do is add the fans. And they're working,
yes,
you know, diligently on trying to figure out a way to do that, to get the fans in. You know,
right. I mean, the Belmont, I think, is second. I think the Derby has the most fans come to it live, then the Belmont, then the Preakness. I mean, you're talking 80,000 people that would normally want to come out for this race day, and right now there's going to be no one.
Well, you know, you're exactly right, and it's going to be tough, especially for the Belmont, because that's such a tradition, and you know, it's a great place, and you know, you can ride the trains in from the city, you know, go right straight into Belmont Park, and you know, and go to the races and then get back on and go back. You know, it's easy to get back over to New Jersey, you know.
Right. Oh, no. I agree with you. And I'm sure the NBC is going to do a great production of the race, and it's all going to be a spectacular event, except how many times can they show the scenes of the empty stands?
Right. Well, you know, back in the day, NASCAR, they learned how to do a paint scheme of painting the seats in the stands so that whenever the cameras would sweep by it, it was kind of a blur and they were dark spots and it looked like that they had fans in the stands.
Okay.
You know, and so, but you can't do that with the horse racing, you know, because it's such a, you know, such a big venue to go to. But, you know, Steve, I don't know if it's really affecting the horse, the thoroughbred end of it, as far as not having stands there, because they're betting like crazy through the OTBs and the Twin Spires, you know.
Oh, it's unbelievable. You're right. You're right. Millions and millions. We saw the earlier during the whole COVID-19 debacle that's taking place, that Gulfstream Park, instead of doing $150 million 1 month, they did $280 million in handle. It was unbelievable.
You know, Steve, another thing, too, that the thoroughbreds have going for them, and it's really just going all over the top, is they have historical racing. And that seems to be very popular, you know, with the casinos and the racinos and everything. You know, that's really contributing a lot of money, to the thoroughbred purses with historical racing that they have. And they can do that year-round and everything. And then it's my understanding that some of the casinos are starting to open here, like here in Florida, at Fort Lauderdale, the Hard Rock. They're opening, I believe, this weekend.
That's right. That's right. But they've gotten, I don't know what goals they had to go through, but they're owned by the Seminole Indians, so they right. You know, take care and fend themselves, and I think they feel that they have the right solution to be able to open the casinos, which is great, because right. Once a casino like that gets open, then other casinos can, you know, follow their blueprint, and they'll be able to open, and that'll help racing even more.
Right. Well, see, you got to remember another thing, too, is that, like in Kentucky, at Keeneland and Churchill and Ellis Park and the Red Mile, the Harness people, there is no casino.
Right.
You know, and so what they're doing now is what they normally do. It's just without not having fans in the stands.
Correct.
And that's a big difference, you know.
Well, it is, and it works for the thoroughbreds, and it sort of works for the harness. I mean, harness is still hampered because they don't get the kind of money that has been wagered. And, in fact, it makes me wonder when the virus first hit in March and there was an uproar because they wanted the stable area at Pompano Park to be cleared away. And the new head of racing, the new vice president, Joe Morris, came down there and told everyone, no, you don't have to leave the property until you're ready. You can stay here as long as you want to, but we've called an end to the race season. And I think that was a huge, huge mistake, because Pompano Park had enough horses they could race at least three nights a week. And if they had done that for the, you know, for the main 2 months of the pandemic, they would have handled upwards of $3 and $4 million a day.
Right. Well, you know, Steve, another thing that, you know, talking about the harness, you know, and how they're doing, the thoroughbreds, they get a lot of sponsorships for their races, kind of like they do, you know, like with NASCAR. And the Kentucky Downs meet that's coming up, they're going to be over 6 days, they're paying out $12 million in purse money. And, you know, that's all corp. That's where they're getting their money from, is the corporate, you know, sponsor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's what the thing about the thoroughbred is, they're really into the marketing aspect of, you know, what they're doing and how they're doing it. You know, like the Toyota Bluegrass. You know, that's a big Toyota company plant in Lexington and throughout Kentucky. And so what they do is they, you know, they tap into them. You know, that type of thing. And, you know, that really helps sustain the thoroughbred business, because, when you have that corporate sponsorship, you know, there, you don't have to depend on the money that's being, you know, wagered,
exactly.
You know, on track. You know, and then you end up going like Gulfstream's doing over $5 million a day, you know, in wagering just through simulcasting, plus the corporate sponsorships that they have. You know, that gives you a lot of racing room, you know.
It's all revenue that goes right to the bottom line to keep the product going. It's just that I'm sorry that harness racing is not as affluent to be able to get the sponsorship that Thoroughbred does. That just shows another big difference between the two sports.
Right. Well, you know, the show horse people, you know, we got a lot of shows, show horse people here. In fact, we had a show here last week at Sunshine Meadows, and everybody practiced through, you know, the distance from the virus.
Right.
And we did all the things that we were supposed to do, and it turned out real good for us.
I had done a story for Harness Link recently. It just came out yesterday. But in England, in the United Kingdom, where, you know, again, Thoroughbred racing dominates, but they do have harness racing, they're actually going to try pay-per-view on the qualifiers next week that are taking place at York Harness Track, which is in northern England, right on the border of Scotland and England. And they're charging what comes out to $2.53, and you'll be able to watch the qualifiers. And at first people were laughing at it, saying, oh, they're charging money. But when you realize that in England, the harness racing people, they're hurting a lot worse than we are in the United States. Right. And it's only $2.50. So if you want to watch the races, I mean, I don't have any horses entered, but next weekend I'm gonna pay and go pay per view on the qualifiers just to give them a little bit of support and see how it goes. But it's, you know, situations like this get people to really think hard about how to do things and come up with novel ideas. And this is a trial. If it doesn't go over well, you know, for the production and everything that they're doing, well, they won't do it for the qualifiers. But at least they're experimenting and trying something different.
Right. Is that going to be on Sky Sports, or how do you view that?
Well, I'm waiting
for their website
destination, but I think the British Harness Racing Club, it'll probably come through their website. But apparently they have a gentleman that's setting it all up. And then he'll have the link where you'll be able to go and click on it and you know, pay your $2.53. And they're going to have a pre-show starting at 12:30. They have one of the leading race announcers, whether it's thoroughbreds, show horses. He's called at the Royal Ascot, a gentleman by the name of Darren Owen. And he is actually the chairman of the British Harness Racing Club. So he'll be doing commentary and calling the races. And so it's something different. And I give him all the credit in the world. And hopefully I'm going to remember, because they are 5 hours ahead of us, and you know, get up at 7 a.m., 6 a.m., and sign on and watch the races.
Right. Well, you know, the renegade I am, the type of guy I am, I'm just, you know, always thinking about things. Never did have the luck to get going what I needed to get going. But my take on all of this, especially like with the qualifiers, and when you were doing the qualifiers for Sam down at the Trotting Center, you know, it would work. It would be an easy sell to get a sponsor to come in and say, you know, okay, yeah, I need X number of dollars to do these qualifiers, you know, and that's the best way to go to it, you know. Then you don't have to worry about, you know, trying to chase, you know, $2.50 when you can come in and get a sponsor to sponsor all the races for
you're absolutely right. And I know that Sam spent at least, you know, a couple thousand dollars each week to be able to make the tape and the race calls and everything together for the qualifiers.
Right.
You know, but you got to get, again, you give them credit for trying to make it happen. I mean, all these other places do qualifiers and nobody, you know, tried to do whether it be Facebook Live or you know, video and race calls. So, yeah, you have to give them credit. You know, hopefully we learned a lot during this time period of the do's and don'ts and racing and that it can come back. But absolutely, we need the fans, though. That's the most important thing.
Yeah, you know, and it is in the marketing aspect of it. You know, like, for, say, for example, I lived up in New York, real close to Belmont when I was working there. And it was interesting. Here we're around all these Belmont horses, and, you know, it was exciting. But some of the best times that we had were when we went over to one of the boroughs and we had a party at somebody's house and watched it on TV. You know, and I think that's what's going to happen now with horse racing and NASCAR, you know, and all the other sports, is that somebody's going to be having a party somewhere. And the television is the way to go, the video. You know, and once our sports start realizing that we have to do that to get our product out to our customers, our fans, you know, then it's going to happen like NASCAR is doing now. They're doing a real good job of it. And, you know, I'm telling you, it's TV, and hey, see, maybe we ought to get a hold of those Europeans and tell them, let us get a sponsor and broadcast them here in the States.
There you go. That could have, or better yet, I think Scott Miller should have a Belmont barbecue.
You know, I'm going to. I'm going to, Steve. I've already planned it. I've got everything all set aside and ready to go. And, you know, of course, unfortunately.
I'm waiting for my invitation, buddy.
Okay, well, we'll have to have you come on out, you know. For it, you know, because we're getting close to that point where we can start doing that. The only problem is at the Belmont this year, the problem they've got is they got to maintain a 6-foot distance between each horse as they're going around the track.
I don't think that's going to happen. But I know if you get a big screen projector, we can all come watch the races outside and practice social distancing.
There you go. Well, Steve, we're done here today. We up and down. I think, you know, just kind of a good.
Yeah, I think we covered most everything to a degree.
It was good and everything. Next week, we're going to start putting in our sponsors. Our whole show next week is going to change dramatically next week.
And, it's all going to be pretty good, I hope.
It will be, Steve. And you and I sit down and talk about that on Monday, and we got some sponsors we're going to talk to, and then we'll up the game here.
Good.
Steve, thanks for being here with me and keep us going. And, you know, I appreciate it. And thanks to Don and them at BBS. Appreciate that. And I look forward to everybody coming next week.